At this time, I would like to introduce our keynote speaker, Dr. James Healy. Since 1989, Dr. Healy has been the director of the Center for Family Ministry of the Catholic Diocese of Joliet, Illinois. Jim Healy has spoken on marriage in over 85 dioceses across the country and beyond. His marriage preparation and enrichment materials, most notably his CD, When the Cake is Gone, How to Get Married and Stay Engaged, and his Living Together and Christian Commitment materials have been used in every diocese in the United States. Dr. Healy has contributed chapters to a number of books and has written for such magazines as Family Perspectives, Catholic World, Ligorian, Marriage, and Deacon Digest. He has also written online for the USCCB website, For Your Marriage, for the First Day and Forever electronic newsletter, for the newly married, and for Everyday Catholic. Dr. Healy was the founding president of Illinois' Catholic Family Ministries and has served as an advisor to the National Council of Catholic Bishops Committee on Marriage and the Family. He was honored with the 2000 Family Ministry Award by the National Association of Catholic Family Life Ministers. He and his wife, Madonna, have four children. If we can give a warm Texas welcome to Dr. James Healy.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here, and not just because it's 12 degrees below zero in Chicago, right? I've been thinking about you for a long time. When Margaret called last June or July, I said yes, and since then I've been kind of thinking on you, off and off, seeing, wondering how you're doing here. And this is a good time to be talking about the spirituality of the family. Pope Francis has certainly put it on the front burner, and I can tell that it's on the front burner here, too. And I thought that was a wonderful homily by Bishop Mulvey. You can't clap during Mass, but let's clap for him now. Huh? Well, you need to know something about my family. And yes, my wife's name is Madonna. Okay, just like, yes, it's not a stage name, that's her name. Just like the singer, okay, which has been a problem sometimes. But my wife, my wife wears her underwear on the inside, okay? So I can tell them apart that way. And so we got four kids, Michael, Kevin, Claire, and Danny. And Daniel, our youngest, turns 21 1 month from today. And so I think we should throw a party, not for him, but for us, okay? I feel like a salmon that's been upstream and has finally spawned, you know? I know there's a lot more to come. I really want to thank you, not just for you, but for me, because this is good for me to be up here. There's an old saying, the teacher teaches what he or she wants to learn. Okay? That's why we do it. And I really want to learn this stuff. I'm a guy who really believes it. I really believe it, and I really forget it. Okay? Frequently. Ask my wife, ask my kids. Right? I keep getting surprised. I'm thinking of one thing that happened early in our marriage. We've been married 30 years now, okay? But this was, oh, thank you. Okay. But this happened early in our marriage, back at the very beginning. We had this understanding, I don't know where it came from, that every year on our anniversary, Madonna would wear her wedding dress again. Okay, isn't that a nice idea? Very nice. But not only that, we would go out to eat with her wearing the dress. It was the 80s, you know, I don't know where this thing came from, okay? So we could get away with it because it was kind of a simple white dress. I didn't exactly have to throw flowers in front of her, you know, as we went into the restaurant, all right? But, so we did that the first year. It was beautiful, okay? Second year, we moved to a new town, new restaurant, okay? Second year anniversary, we come into the new restaurant, and the man, the maitre d', he sees us coming, okay? And he's I think he's going to cry. He thinks this is so beautiful. He's going, oh, you know, he's just like that. And we're about to sit down, and he says to me, he says, hey, come here. You know, I don't know the guy, but I go up there. He puts his arm on my shoulder, and he points to my wife, and he says, she's graduating today, isn't she? I think that's the last year we did that. I can't remember doing that again, okay? But I tell that story. Now, she's only a couple years younger than me. She wants me to tell you that. I didn't rob the cradle, all right? But I tell you that story because the surprises keep coming, don't they? In family life, marriage and family life. And I hope there'll be some surprises today as we talk about marriage and family. You know, there's a million ways to talk about family today. Bishop Mulvey talked about some of them. But what did St. John Paul II say? He said, families become what you are. Well, that's great, except what are we? Okay? And somebody said, the heart of ministry is having a clear vision and a non-anxious presence. Okay? We got to know what we're calling people to, don't we? Okay? If you don't know where you're going, any place will do, right? That the heart of ministry is having a clear vision and a non-anxious presence. So it's not enough to just be clear about what we're calling families to, but we got to be non-anxious about it. We say, and you can do it. We're doing it, okay? We're not perfect, but we're in there. We're doing it, right? And so that's what we're going to talk about today during this hour. Okay, first, what is this crystal clear vision that we can offer families and ourselves, okay? And second, how can we accompany them on this path? That's one of Pope Francis's favorite words. It was in the synod. That's what we're supposed to be thinking about this year as we prepare for the next synod. How do we accompany, okay, them? How do we balance clarity and empathy? You know, somebody said, love without truth is sentimentality, but truth without love is arrogance, okay? So how do we have truth and love? How do we balance that? How do we accompany? How do we have the vision but accompany people in all the different struggles and challenges and ways that they are? Okay, we got to do both. We got to do both. All right, so how do we do that? Well, this is how I want us to start. I want to ask you a question. I'd like for you to each reflect on this. In your own life, think about somebody who really saw you clear, who saw you whole, who's before you even knew who you could be, they knew. And they called you forward. They saw things in you that you didn't even know you had. They saw you before you even saw yourself, and they helped you get to this day. They accompanied you. They blessed you. They brought you along, okay? Who was that in your life who did that? Just think for a moment. Who comes? Maybe if I ask this question tomorrow, somebody else in your life would. But today, who comes to your mind when I ask that question? Who saw you and saw your possibilities? Okay? Take a moment to thank God for that person, you know? In Hebrews, it says, we have a cloud of witnesses that help us to accomplish the race that we've been called to with our eye on Jesus, okay? Now, because this is a Christian Catholic community, we want to learn in each other's presence, I'm going to ask you to just turn to the person, kind of like a 1 or 30 second icebreaker. Turn to the person to your right and honor that person that you thought of in your heart by saying their name to the person to your right. And in just a couple of sentences, no more than that, why was that person so important to you? Okay, I'm going to ask you to do that. Turn to the person to your right, and if you turn to the person to your right and there's nobody there, turn back and become part of the threesome. Okay, so let's do that. It's going to go quick. Ready? Go.
This is CCN Radio, KLUX, Robstown, Corpus Christi.
Okay, that's about all we have time for. So What do we have? About 750, 800, 900 people here today? That means we have at least 900 patron saints with us too. Kind of a cloud of witness hovering over us. And then their spirit and the spirit of Jesus. Let's think about how we can get further in this path. All right? So the vision and how to accompany families in that vision. I do a lot of marriage preparation. I do a lot of marriage enrichment. Okay? And I almost always ask married couples, and by the way, when it comes to family ministry and family life, we're all insiders. There's no outsiders, okay, even if we're not married. Okay, maybe there's a marriage behind us in our past. Maybe there's a marriage in our present. Maybe there's a marriage in our future, we're hoping, or maybe not. Okay, maybe we have kids of our own. Maybe we're called to parent children spiritually, the next generation. But we're all together in this, all right? We're all called to this vision. Anyway, when I talk to married couples, I almost always start with this question. I ask them this question. Okay, married couples, what's some of the most wonderful, joyous, greatest, most lovely, you know, upbeat parts of marriage? And I get answers like this. Planning a future together. Okay? Thinking about all that. Especially older couples, they'll say reminiscing about past events. You know, we've been married 30 years, and so a lot of nice things have happened, and so... But I have a terrible memory, so I can't remember. So, you know, it's bad. So I said, Madonna, now, which kid said that? You know, and what vacation was that? Madonna remembers everything, so she reminds me of all that. So reminiscing about past events, planning the future. Children, okay, wonderful part of marriage. Sex comes up, okay? Can I get a vote for sex? Anybody? Come on, we want to grow here, grow this diocese. All right, sex. Okay, all these wonderful parts, things about marriage. That sense of security, he's always there, she's always there. So we get this big list, and it's really great. But then I have one other question. You know what it is? I ask the same married couples, I say, okay, what's the most challenging? What's the most painful? What's the most wrenching, arduous parts of marriage? Guess what I get? Planning a future together. It's not always fun, is it? Somebody loses a job, somebody gets sick, all sorts of challenges. Okay? Thinking about past events, because it's not always fun to reminisce, isn't it? Okay, there's a lot of water over the dam, and some of it's dirty water. Okay, there's a lot of, let's face it, as we think about our marriages looking backwards, there's a lot of healing that needs to take place, and that can be very painful. Okay? Children? Can we put children on the wonderful side? Can we put children on the tough side too? Who can clap for that? Come on. The children aren't here. We can be honest, can't we? Okay? They can make you cry for joy. And they can make you just cry. All right? How about sex? That's not an invitation. I should rephrase that somehow. I don't mean it that way. I mean on this list. Okay, so on this list of the wonderful things and the tough things, we've already got sex on the good side. Can we put sex on the tough side too? Yeah. Have you ever been in bed with an iceberg? You know? After a fight, you know? It's something good. Okay. And by the way, remember that reminiscing about past events. Okay. When I say Madonna remembers everything, she remembers everything, right? Thank God she's forgiven me for most of it, okay? But after a fight, I don't know if you ever had a fight, if you're married, and the other person's in bed, and they're like the Himalayas in the distance, you know? You see the outline, and you dare not even reach out. You're going to lose all the heat in your hand, you know? All right? So the more wonderful the sexual relationship in marriage, the more painful it is, right, when it's not there. How about security, that sense of he's always there, she's always there? What's the tough part? She's always there. He's always there, you know? Somebody talked about retirement is twice the husband, half the money, you know? Always there. It's a challenge, right? Okay, now, I've asked these two questions everywhere from Japan to England, okay? From North Dakota to the Caribbean, and I promise you, when we do this, it always happens. Everything ends up on both sides, okay? And that is why I know I'm in the presence of a sacrament. Not just because I read it in a book, because the church teaches us that, because it's in my bones, okay? It's not two different things. It's not like the good stuff and the bad stuff in marriage. It's the same stuff. The same stuff that just crucifies me, raises me up again, okay? The same stuff that just kills me, cures me. The same things that make my life really tough make my life worth living at all. That's why I know I'm living a sacrament. The sacrament of life and raising kids is just the same. And my God, if you're a single parent, you are doubly blessed, in my opinion, because you're doing all that on your own. Okay? We're called to a three-step scriptural process. And remember that clear vision? Here it comes, okay, at the beginning of it at least. We're called to a three-step, and it's a scriptural process. That's what we're called to. That's what we call ourselves to and the world to. Okay? Three steps. Here's the first stage in family life that we're called to. Transfiguration. Okay? Do you remember transfiguration in the Bible? Jesus took the executive cabinet, okay? Peter, John, and James, the inner, you know, the running buddies, that group there, okay? And he went up to the top of Mount Tabor. And I've been there in Israel to at least where they think Mount Tabor is, all right? It's very steep. It's very beautiful up there. You can see a long ways. It's very cool. Cools off, all right? So Jesus went up there with the three, and he started to pray, didn't he? And his face began to shine, and his clothes became whiter than a wedding garment. Here, let's put this down here. So, remember, Moses and Elijah appeared, signifying the law and the prophets. It was all there. It was all perfect. They're on top of the mountain, okay? Do you remember what Peter said? Anybody remember? Yeah, he said, Lord, it is good for us to be up here. And he almost think that good should be in capital letters. You know, Lord, it is good for us to be up here. And then he says, Lord, with your permission, let me put up three tents, one for you, one for Moses, for Elijah. And here in the United States, when we hear that, we think, oh, that's fun. They're going to camp out tonight, okay? But where do they live? They live in the Mideast. What do they live in permanently? Tents and stone, okay? So he's not saying let's stay out overnight. He's saying let's never leave. Let's never come off of this mountaintop, this transfiguration, okay, where it's all perfect. Now, what does that have to do with marriage and family life? What's the experience at the beginning of marriage, okay, or near the beginning of it, that's a transfiguration experience for most people? Falling in love. Isn't that a mountaintop experience? Your face shines. You don't see any defects. You feel perfect. You feel complete. The other person doesn't have any defects. You see no shadow, okay? Even the in-laws, Moses and Elijah, they look perfect. You know? It's all wonderful, right? And, you know, sometimes we get pretty cynical about romantic love, don't we? Okay, we call that puppy love, you know? Say, that's not real love. That's just the Holy Spirit's tricky way of getting you married. Okay? But and then real love comes later, you know, with the dirty diapers and the money problems. Okay? But that's not real love. Well, I disagree. I disagree about falling in love. I think it's part of the sacrament. You know, the reading this morning about the evil one, okay? The evil one didn't create romantic love. God created that. It's part of the sacrament. And do you know why it's part of the sacrament? Because it's a little taste on the tongue of what God's got in store for us forever. Okay? It's a pointer. Okay? Because think about what romantic love feels like. You know, you just want to wallow in that wonderful feeling. You say, oh, I can't believe it's finally happened to me. I love him, and he loves me, or I love her. Okay? And you just want to kind of live in that. You don't even want to eat or drink or work sometimes or do anything. For once in our to do this, to do that life, just being is enough, being in love. It feels like enough. Well, what do you think heaven is? What do you think the beatific vision is? It's being in love forever, okay? That's why romantic love is so powerful and why it's part of the sacrament, because it's a little taste on the tongue of what God's got in store for us forever, okay? That's why it's powerful. That's why we'll do anything. Not because it's a fake, but because it's a true pointer. In fact, somebody said, okay, your whole marriage of 50 or 60 years is really just marriage prep. for the real marriage that you're imitating and that lasts forever, right? As the bishop said this morning, marriage is supposed to be an imitation of divine love, you know? The kingdom of God is like a happily married couple. It doesn't quite say it there, but that's the image over and over again in the Bible, all right? We're supposed to imitate that, and we're supposed to point to the reality. And romantic love, that part of marriage, points to the reality of what life is like forever. In fact, you know, in the book of Revelations, what's the image of eternity in the book of Revelations? The wedding feast, the eternal, the reception, the wedding reception that goes on forever. You've probably been to a couple like that, okay? Going on for a long time. Anyway, but in the book of Revelations, that goes on forever. So when I talk to engaged couples, I say, don't think that just saying your vows in church is the holy part, and then all hell can break loose at the party, okay? Because the reception is just a sacramental part of the evening, because what it's trying to do is imitate for 3 or 4 hours eternity. The bliss, okay, of everybody be together where God, the bridegroom, meets his bride, okay? That's part of the sacrament. So it's not so important, you know, who lets the butterflies out, who blows the bubbles, but it has to image eternity. Did everybody feel loved? Did everybody feel welcome? Did everybody have enough to eat? All right. Okay? So, that's transfiguration, right? And is transfiguration, do you ever feel transfigured? If there are those of us who had a child, isn't that wonderful when the baby finally comes? I mean, let's face it, you get crucified first, right? Through labor. But when you're holding the baby, aren't you back on top of the mountain? I remember we had our first child, okay? And we went to Mass for the first time and sat near the front. I felt like the Holy Family. I felt like there's a glow coming off us that could be felt, you know? You know, there's supposedly this Irish mother of 10. She had 10 children, and she used to sniff about the Holy Family. She'd say, them and their one, okay? But it doesn't matter, okay? It was the Holy Family, right? But every one of us are back on top of that mountain, that transfiguration top of the mountain. We're like a Holy Family. We are, and we feel like a Holy Family. Okay, imitating there, okay? Now, but here's the thing. Did Jesus stay on that mountaintop? No, he didn't. What was waiting for Jesus when he finally came off the mountain? The cross, okay? What's waiting for married couples and parents, okay? Do they stay up top of that mountain for their whole marriage or their whole childbearing years? I mean, I remember I was on such a mountain when our children were born, especially with Michael, our first. I didn't even miss making love with my wife. I almost thought that would bring me down. I was on such a high. Well, I came off that mountain, okay, after a while. And then I was, you know, you missed. But you come off the mountain, all right? And there's the cross. Okay? But we believe that if we're faithful, okay, we'll rise again. So that's the clear vision, transfiguration, dying and rising, okay? And that's true for marriage. That's true for parenting, okay? And those who've had a divorce, and by the way, the statistics are amazing, about 25% of adult Catholics have had a divorce, have been divorced. Okay? It's that high. So there's a lot of dying and rising going on there too. And after an annulment, or after a death and a remarriage, all right? They have a lot to teach us about dying and rising, don't they? All right? Okay. So, we're called to that vision of dying and rising, okay? No matter what we're into. And it's a funny thing. I call it the sacramental three-step, transfiguration, dying, and rising. I was at back about 40 years ago. I'm a psychologist by training, although I've been working for the church for 30 years, okay? And about 37 years, 34 years, 36 years ago, I was sitting there listening to a pastoral counselor talking about marriage. And, oh, we're listening to him. He was famous. We're buying his books and everything. And then in the afternoon, he said to us, listen, is anybody taping me? Anybody recording me? And we said, well, no, we're not. He says, well, then, he said, let me be honest with you. I've been married 6 times. And we thought, oh, God, we bought your books in the morning. You could have told us that in the morning, you know? Okay? But then what did he say? To the same person. Right? This sacrament, this transfiguration, dying and rising doesn't happen just once, does it? It happens over and over. In fact, somebody said, there's no such thing as the noun of Catholic marriage. There's only the verb of Catholic marrying over and over again. There's this apocryphal story, supposedly, about a man and a woman in counseling, okay, a husband and wife, and they're talking to each other. And the counselor's listening. And the woman just turns to the husband. She says, why don't you just tell me you love me more often? Okay, I think if you told me you love me, I think I could handle everything else. And the guy says, look, we got married 31 years ago. On that day, I told you I loved you. If it changes, I'll let you know. Okay? Well, that's not our image of marriage, okay? On the wedding day, you don't say, I do. You say, I will. I will die and rise with you over and over and over again, not just today. All right? Okay? And that's what we're called for. In fact, I remember I was counseling, a couple came in, and they had the little, like, one-year-old baby with them. And in my presence, the father, the husband, you know, said to the wife, he said, you betrayed me. He said, this is not the marriage I committed to. Well, the guy's right. He's one marriage back. Okay? That's the marriage he's got to commit to now. Time to get married again. All right? And isn't it true with kids, too? Okay? You go through transfiguration times. You go through times when you're close to your kids. And then you go through times, you know, that when the kids were little, my God, if you're going to the grocery store, the drug, oh, can I go? Please, Daddy, please, can I go? And then at some point, they don't even want to go on vacation with you. Okay? Right? Because they might miss a call. You know? No, I can't go to California with it. I might get a call. All right, so even with the kids, we go through this transfiguration. And it goes away all through our life, okay? All through our life. Okay, engaged couples have to die. They have marriage. What's the most likely year for divorce? If a couple's ever going to get divorced, do you know what the most likely year is? Statistically? It hovers right around the third year. And you might say, well, why? Well, what happens for a lot of couples around the third year, give and take a number of years? Children. And you might say, what are you trying to say? Children are the most wonderful parts of marriage. And I will say, yes. And the toughest, one of the toughest, is a lot of dying and rising that goes on there. Okay? A lot of dying and rising. So it goes on all the way through. Okay? And there's dying and rising at every part of the family. Let's just skip the chase here. We're going to move along a little more quickly now. Okay? I'll tell you where in the cycle there's a lot of dying and rising when you have adult children. Okay? Do you ever wonder why grandparents and grandchildren are so close? They have a common enemy. Kinda. Okay? Because parents have expectations of their kids, don't they, by God? All right? And, you know, I'm 61 now. My parents died, a couple years ago. They had expectations of me, and I had expectations of my kids. But did my parents have expectations on the grandchildren? No, they just loved them. It was very godlike. Okay? There's nothing like grandparent love, right? Because it's, oh, Grandpa loves you so much, Grandma. Okay? Because it's like godlike, almost without conditions. Most grandparents don't have to put the hammer down too much, right? And so it's the most beautiful thing in the world, okay? Well, in the lifespan, parents of adult children, and it feels like crucifixion, have to become more grandparent-like in their love, okay? Because sooner or later, when you look at your kid, and there might be 21, 31, 38, at some point, you either say to them out loud or to yourself, you say, okay, be who you are. Oh, and that hurts. Right? Because we have all these expectations of our kids. We want them to do this, do that. And they don't always do that. And it feels like crucifixion to let go. Somebody said the heart of the spiritual life is knowing when to hang on and when to let go. Okay? That's it, man. Hang on to that kid. Hang on to that kid. Let it go. Hang on to that job. Hang on to that job. Let it go. Hang on to life. Hang on to life. Let go. Okay? And knowing when to let go. That's the heart of the spiritual life. And one of the hardest things for the parents of adult children is to say, okay, be who you are. I'm still going to encourage you different ways, but be who you are. And that can feel like dying, but then it feels like living right afterwards for them and for you. Okay? So there's dying and rising all the way through. Let me cut to the chase. What's the last stage of marriage? Widowhood. Unless there's a divorce, okay, which is... Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of divorce, okay? But unless there's a divorce, widowhood is the last stage of your marriage. It might last for a year, it might last for the rest of your life, but as long as it lasts, I'll tell you a quick story about that to make sense of it, okay? There's a famous psychiatrist named Dr. Viktor Frankl, and a man came to him. He said, "Doctor, you got to help me." He says, I was married 54 years, and my wife died about 4 months ago. I'm just wandering around. I know I eat food. I don't even taste it. I don't taste the food. I hardly ever sleep in the bedroom. I just fall asleep on the sofa watching TV. I'm always thinking about her, okay? I just think about her. I think about her eyes just shiny and looking at me and laughing about something. And every moment was wonderful, and every moment's terrible now. He says, "You got to help me." And Dr. Frankl just listened. And then he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. If it had been you who died, and your wife was alone here now, what would her life be like?" And he kind of shook his head. He says, well, we lived for each other. She'd be going through all this hell." And Dr. Frankl said, "Okay, then, that was your last gift, wasn't it? Your last gift to your wife was to survive her, okay? But now you got to pay. You got to pay for that gift now by mourning her." And the guy just stared at the ground for a while, and then he kind of stood up, squared his shoulders, and shook his hand. There's dying and rising all the way through, and that's why I know it's a sacrament, because it teaches us not to be afraid to die. It teaches us there's life after death, okay? Now, here's the only problem. Who likes to die? It's hard to die. It's hard to die to our spouse. It's hard to die to our kids. It's hard to do that, to go through that cycle over and over again. Thank God we believe in a God who knows how to die and rise. Okay, at best we're amateurs at that. At worst we're fakers. Thank God we believe in a God who can lead us through death to life, all through our lives. And that's why for Catholics, the relationship between marriage and family life and the Eucharist is just like this. It's almost welded shut. You know, there's an old Yiddish saying, one hand washes the other. That's like marriage and the Eucharist, marriage and family life and the Eucharist. Because think about what Bishop Mulvey did this morning. He took the bread, okay, and he said, "This is my body given for you." And as sacraments, what do we believe? That Jesus is truly present right there, all right? Well, in a sacramental marriage, when a man and a woman make love, what's the woman saying to the man? She's saying, "This is my body given for you," okay? What's the man saying right back? "This is my body given for you." And we believe that Jesus is present there very specially, not quite like Eucharist, okay? But sacramentally, okay? I mean, the Catholic Church is the only church that's made a sacrament out of sexual love. There's only seven of them, okay? Seven privileged ways that God's come to us. One is the sacrament of committed sexual love. Do this in memory of me. And we make love in memory of the die. As we give ourselves to each other in imitating of Jesus who gave himself for us, we say, "Please, Lord, help us to imitate you." Okay, somebody said, you can go to church and renew your vows. That's beautiful. But really, every time you give these each other sexually, you're renewing your vows. You're saying, "These are our bodies given for you." Okay? That's it. Okay. That's not much different as a parent. Okay, when you say, "This is my body, okay, which is given for you." I mean, who is a parent who wouldn't happily die for their kid if they could? Okay? I mean, if I could save the life of my child, you know, by jumping out a window or something, I'd do it. And I'd thank God all the way down for the chance. And that doesn't make me a hero. That just makes me a parent. Okay? We put our bodies where our life is. Okay. Well, it's easy to die for our spouse or for our kids. It's a little bit harder to live for them, okay? I know we got school teachers here. My wife is a school teacher. Has been for many, you know, number of years. And I'll tell you, if you want to see how hard a Catholic school teacher works, marry one, and you'll find incredible how much they work. But she was talking about one little second grader who says, "Oh, Mrs. Healy, I love you so much. I would kiss your feet. I would do anything for you. I would die for you." You know, and my wife says, "Could you just keep quiet in class?" And he says, now that's a tough one, okay? Well, we're kind of like that too, okay? We can make the grand gesture for our family members, but it's a little bit harder to do the daily ones. And that's where the Eucharist comes back too, okay? Because we send our, I'll put it this way. I've had a lot of what I call driveway prayers in my life. Some of my fervent prayers have been in driveways, like the driveway right out there, okay, before I came in here. But especially the driveway of my house, okay? Because, you know, back when the kids, they were older now, but back when they were 6, 2, 4, and 1, Madonna had not gone back to teaching. She was at home with the kids, you know. And I remember I'd work all day, and I'd come home at 5:30, you know, and I'd sit in the driveway. And if it was the summer, the windows were open, I could hear those kids in there, you know. And then you hear that unmistakable sound, you know, and so your father's knocking. And I'm already dead tired from work, you know. She is too, right? And so I'm sitting in the driveway, and I'm saying, I'm not going in there. They're going to eat me alive. Okay. Well, I learned to pray in that driveway. And the prayer that came to me is, Lord, just like you took the loaves and the fishes, and you fed the multitude, I got my own multitude in there, and I know I'm not enough. Okay? I know I'm not enough. All right? If there's any, at 61, if there's a lot of things are less clear, here's two things super clear. One, I'm not enough. I'm not enough for my wife, for my kids, for my job, for my life. Here's the only thing that's just as clear. God's enough. And I'd say, Lord, please, just like you took that loaves and fishes, break me open, bless me, break me, make me enough to feed the people I love, please. And every time I prayed that prayer, the anxiety would go down. I went in, and I was enough, with maybe even a little left over, okay? But every time I left God out of it, it wasn't pretty, okay? All right. So that's what we're doing. That's the clear vision. Lord, make us enough, okay? Make us enough so that we can feed the people we love, okay? And we call others, okay? When it comes to marriage and family life, we don't call them to a life of ease. We call them to a life of meaning, okay? We can't make it tickle, but we can make it meaningful. We can make it joyous through transfiguration, dying, and rising, okay? That's what we're called to. And if we get that inside our head, nothing that separates us from the love of God, nothing that's wasted in the kingdom of God. Once we get that thing in our hearts, transfiguration, dying, and rising, every little death is meaningful, okay? St. Paul says, we're all gonna suffer, so we might as well suffer for the right things, get some use out of them, okay? So in family life, every little death leads to life, all right? But we got to bless them, okay? We can't just, okay, we want to recognize the Paschal Mystery, but how do you accompany families? How do you bless them? Well, that's a little bit different. That's the last part of this, okay? That's how we're going to talk about blessing them. Now, see, blessing is a funny term because there's a biblical meaning of blessing, and then the secular meaning is really the only time you bless somebody is when they sneeze, right? Or maybe it's something that only a priest or a deacon can do. Now, there are some blessings that only a bishop or a priest or a deacon can do, okay? But let's talk about what it means to bless our own children and to bless the people that we minister to, okay? Now, for that, we got to go back to Scripture again. Who did the blessing in the aptly termed the patriarchal age? When the blessing was given, who was it the person who administered the blessing? The Father. And who did the Father bless? Remember? It was the firstborn, and it was the firstborn son. He gave a special blessing. And then if you look in the Bible, there's some subsidiary blessings for the other kids, but usually for the other boys. Okay. Well, today we want both the mothers and the fathers to bless, not just the firstborn sons, but all their kids. But let's look a little bit at what a blessing looks like in the Bible. And then we're going to apply it to our lives. The most famous blessing is what? It's probably Isaac when he was blessing Jacob. Now, he thought he was blessing Esau, but we'll leave that part out, okay? All right, do you remember what that looked like? Isaac said to Jacob, his son, he says, come forward, my son, and kiss me that I can give you my blessing. And Jacob came forward, and Isaac hugged him, and he says, ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the new mown of the Lord's fields, which the Lord has blessed. And then he said, may the Lord give you from the heavens, and may all nations bow down before you. May you have dromedaries dripping with gold. You know, this old grandiose kind of foretelling this glorious future. Does that sound familiar? okay? And if you look in the Bible, there's a lot of blessings. That's the most famous one. Well, there's actually four things about that blessing, almost as a motif, that we can take for our own as we bless children. And I'll focus on our own children first in family life, biological children, and then we'll spread it out, okay? Because we're all called to bless this generation, right? But what's the parts of the... First of all, when you look at the blessings in the Bible, there's always touch involved, okay? Very few blessings like, I bless you over there. For the Hebrews, blessing was almost a physical thing. It was almost transmitted physically. Either this, a kiss, a hold, lots of different ways, but it was a physical touch. And we know how important touch is as we bless our own children, okay? Some of us got more blessing than others that way, so in terms of touch. Now, my father was a committed, loving man, but he was not a toucher. There is no doubt about that. In fact, I was 26. My little brother was getting married, and I had to put on one of those fancy ties, you know, that bow tie, but you got to tie it yourself. And I couldn't do it, so my dad came around behind me, and he tied my tie, and I started to cry, because that's the first time I'd ever felt my father's arms around me, okay? It was so powerful and so important. There's so much love that's transmitted that way. And we know how important touch is, you know? Touch for children, for our girls, okay? And sometimes guys have trouble as their girls turn into teenagers and young girls. It's like, gosh, you know, how do I still be warm and loving with this child? But even more so, that's when every girl growing up needs to know what dependable, masculine touch feels like so that they can tell the difference when the time comes, all right? So touch is so important. So that's the first thing, you know, when we bless our children, and that's why in families touch is so important. Important, okay? But it's not enough. Also in the Bible, you hardly ever see blessings without words. There's very few wordless blessings. And we're like that too. Sometimes we say, oh, I don't have to say anything. They know how I feel. Don't they see how hard I work? Isn't it obvious as a school teacher, isn't it pretty obvious that I love these kids? I'm working so hard. Well, it's obvious to us, but not so much to the people we care for. You know, I was a kind of an athlete, if you can believe it, when I was younger, okay? And I remember a coach who was on my case day and night. I thought he hated my guts. And years later, I found out I was his favorite. Sure didn't seem like it. He thought actions were enough. Okay, words. But not just words, but words of high blessing. Okay? Somebody said, there's a study, John Gottman says, that for a child to flourish, they need a ratio of 5 positive to every corrective statement. Okay? To a child, they'll survive with less, but to flourish, and that's true in marriage too, and work settings, but to flourish, they need a ratio of about 5 to 1, 5 positive to every negative statement. Now, if you're like me, I shut up when things are good, and I speak up when things are bad, okay? That's not really the way to bless. Yeah? So the focus is we need to really study our children. In fact, the term to bless means to bend the knee, the translation. It means we need to study our kids to say, what is it in you that's godly that I can honor and tell you about? That's called a blessing, okay? But there's another step, foretelling a glorious future. You know, in the Bible, that's what seems unrealistic because, oh, you know, can we really say that to our kids? All nations will bow down before you, you know? You'll have dromedaries dripping with gold, grandiose blessing, all that. Can we foretell a glorious future for our child? And the answer is yes. That's our job. That is our job, to foretell a glorious future for our child. But we don't make it up. We base it on the godly things we see in them. That's what it means to bless a child, okay? That's what it means. From the words, from the ways we... I'll give you some examples. So Michael, my oldest, he used to come to the office and he'd work, he'd stuff envelopes for me and I'd pay him a penny an envelope, which I know was probably slave labor. Forgive me, God, okay? But he'd make $6 or $7. He's a little kid, right? At the end of the day, he'd say, here, Dad, give it to the missions. He'd give me the $7 and give it to the missions. St. Joseph's Indian School. You get those little blankets. I don't know if you've ever... And he would give the money right back. And I wanted to bless him for that. And so that night when he was in bed, I went to him. And by the way, when's the most important time to bless your kids? Yeah. When are animals the most at risk? When they go to sleep at night, when they wake up, and when they want to eat or drink something. Ever seen a deer just before they go down to drink. They're looking like that because they're defenseless when they eat or drink, okay? And so are kids. The scariest time for kids are when they fall into unconsciousness. Am I going to be okay? Okay. When they wake up from that. And also, in most of the world, mealtime is a scary time. Am I going to get enough to eat? Okay. So that's when kids need blessings, those times. All right. So I went into Michael, and I put my hand on his shoulder, on his forehead, and I said, Michael, I'm so proud of you. I can't wait to see the kind of man that you grow up to be. Okay, you're such a generous kid. You're gonna be loved wherever you are, okay, because of that. Now, that's foretelling a glorious future. But based on what you see in your kid, somebody said the best way to predict the future is to create it, is to help create it. And you can help create the future for your kid by studying them to say, what do you see that's good in your kid? And you bless them for it. You foretell a glorious future based on that, okay? You can also curse them, okay, by saying, oh, you'll never amount to nothing. That's the opposite. That's in the Bible too, okay? All right, but you want to bless them. Now, my youngest son, Daniel, has Asperger's, which some people call autism light. You know, it's on the autism spectrum, or at least it used to be until they switched it around, all right? So he has Asperger's, okay? And he's really a better man than I am. He's not even 21 yet, but he's more virtuous, he's more honest, he's more hardworking, he's more generous, okay? But his social skills, let's just say they're exotic, okay? Let's just leave it at that, okay? All right, that's Dan. And I wanted to bless him, and so I think he was eating pizza, and that's another time to bless your kid when you're feeding them, because they won't leave the table if you're eating pizza, right? All right. And I said, Danny, I know you got some challenges, right? Okay. But you know how to love. What's a glorious future for Danny? Having friends. Having a job. Normal stuff for us. Glorious future for him. And I said, Dan, I know you got some challenges, okay? But you know how to love. And you know how to work. That's enough. You're going to be okay. You're going to do good. You're going to find your niche. All right? We're called to bless our kids. We're called to call them into the future. All right? That's part of what blessing is. And you can see where I'm going with this. It's not just our own child. Okay? That's our call. But let's stick one more time with our own. What's the last stage of the blessing? Helping them get from here to there. Helping them to achieve that future that you're foretelling for them. That's what it means to bless a kid. You know, my dad died about 14 months ago, right? And I'll tell you a quick story about him as we move along here, right? And that is, I was going to be a priest. I was in a high school and college seminary, so 8 years in the seminary. I still had about 3.5 years to go before I'd be a priest, but I left, okay, at age 22. And I went from kind of knowing how the rest of my life was going to be like to not knowing if I was going to have a meal the next day. I thought, my God, if I don't get a job, I could be on Skid Row in a week. You know, I was scared. I came home at Christmas time. And I was at the table, and I was kind of uncharacteristically quiet. My dad was watching me. So I went up to my room, and he came up after me. And he said to me, Jimmy, he said, I know you don't know what's going to happen next. He says, but why don't you think of me as the ocean, okay? And think of you as a log in the ocean. And I'm just going to keep rolling you up to shore. Okay? I don't care how long it takes. I'm going to keep rolling you up there until you're up there safe and sound. Okay? Now, that's a blessing from a parent. I'm going to get you there. Okay? I know what you are. I know who you are. I'm going to keep rolling you up there to you. And you can bless a kid when they're 3, and you can bless a kid when they're 33 and divorced with 3 kids living in your basement. I'm serious. You still got to bless your kid. You can say, hey, I know you're going through trouble, but I know who you are. I know what you can do. You can make this. You're a loving person. You're always going to love people, and they're always going to love you. You're going to come out of this. Okay? That's our job, all right, as parents. Well, what about as ministers? Okay? Well, let me tell you a quick story about that. Let's push it out further. You've probably heard this story, so I apologize if you heard it. And I know we're coming down here towards the end here, okay? There's this story about a man who was given a vision of heaven and hell. Did you hear this? First, he was given this vision of hell. And it was tables piled high with food, and people just sitting at the tables, just staring at him, hungry for eternity. Okay? And he looked at him, and they had these tubes on their arms. They couldn't get any food in their mouths. They couldn't bend their elbows. And then he was given a vision of heaven. Okay? And it looked like the same place. Food piled high on tables, people with tubes on their arms. What was the only difference? They're feeding each other, right? Across the table. Okay? What does that have to do with taking their kids? You know there comes a time when you can't feed your own kid. You know what they need. You'd like to feed them. They won't take it from your hands because their independence is too important. That's when you'd better hope there's somebody else at the parish who can reach out and feed your kid, and you can feed theirs. Okay? We got to raise these kids together because they're inaccessible to their own parents at different times. That's why we got to reach out further. And in ministry, I don't care whether we're teachers, okay, catechists, youth ministers, liturgists, we have to find ways to reach out. And it doesn't take much at the parish. Here, here's a typical blessing of the parish. So you're going up for communion, and here's somebody sitting right here, and it's a teenager. You know how teenagers sometimes at Mass, they're like, oh, don't look at me. You know, I'm not feeling too good about myself. So let's say maybe you were their coach, and as you go by, you just kind of punch them in the arm. You know, just, you know, as you go by. I don't know if that's liturgically correct, by the way. I'm sorry. Okay? But you go by, you just give them a quick punch. Well, you can feed a kid. A kid can live emotionally on that for a week. A little punch from their old coach, you know? And I know because I was that kid. Okay? That's enough. It doesn't take much to bless. There's an unspoken blessing. It doesn't take much to bless a kid. But in catechesis, okay, how do you bless a child? Yeah, you bless them yourself. You know, you study them carefully. You see what they're good at. You foretell a glorious future for them. You help them get there. But even more important, how do we bless our kids? We teach them the faith, okay? Because that blessing goes far beyond what we can do for them. Because think about that. It's really what God does in blessing. Think about the sacramental system. Think about touch, the importance of touch, okay? Somebody said, you take touch to the ultimate degree, that's called eating. When you consume Jesus, and Jesus becomes part of you, okay? Touch is so important. Okay? In marriage, okay? The physical matter of the sacrament of marriage is two human bodies for the next 60 years loving each other. Okay? You know, like it's water is the physical matter of the sacrament of baptism. Okay? Oil. Okay? The physical matter of the sacrament of marriage is human bodies loving each other. Okay? Touch, but words of, you are my beloved son in whom I take delight. Remember, Jesus was blessed by his father. This is my beloved son in whom I take delight. Okay, words. And in another place, listen to him. Okay? Jesus was told by his father, not only do I love you, but I respect you. You're worth listening to. That's what every kid needs from their parent or from any important adult in their life. Yeah, love and respect. Okay? That's what Jesus got and drove him out into ministry. Okay? Okay? From his father. Okay? That's what we need to offer. Okay? But who can offer a more glorious future than we can to our children? God alone, okay? In God's eyes, we're all awaited in love. That's the glorious future. And who can really help them get there when we're not around, okay? So the ultimate blessing for teachers, catechists, anybody else in ministry is to hook them up with this extraordinary community of people committed to Jesus and to Jesus' way, okay? They'll receive the blessing over and over again for the rest of their life. Now, we're going to come to a close in a few minutes here. We're coming pretty close to the end. I'd like you to just think for a moment about that person that you thought of at the beginning. Remember? That person that helped you to see, okay, who you could be and who you were. I'd like to throw a little challenge at you. Thank that person. If that person is alive, call them, talk to them, write them a letter, tell them how important that person is, okay? Because you'll never feel more blessed than in thanking somebody who blessed you, okay? So that's my challenge to you, is reach out and thank them, okay? Because some of us say, gosh, it's hard for us to bless. I don't always feel that blessed myself. But what I say is recover the blessing. Think about the people who helped you become who you are. Find them. Talk to them. Thank them. I don't care if you have to drive 100 miles. It'll be worth it. Maybe they've died. You can still thank them. You can still write them a letter. Because the more you feel blessed, the more you'll be able to go out and bless. Amen. Thank you.
If we can give another warm round of applause for our keynote. It's so important, especially in our day and age today, to really focus on the family and really uplift the beauty of what it means to be family. Who is our first community? And so I'm glad that you all were able to listen to Dr. Healy and get some tools and resources. And take that back to your homes and to your classrooms. Just a few announcements before I let you go to your first workshop.
You've been listening to the keynote address of Dr. James Healy, Director for the Center of Family Life Ministry in Joliet, Illinois, at the 2015 Ministry Conference of the Diocese of Corpus Christi is going on this morning. This has been a live broadcast from the ministry conference. It's at the American Bank Center in downtown Corpus Christi. If you'd like to join us for the afternoon, there's still a number of workshops that are available, and I think you would find it very, very, very helpful. And that concludes our special broadcast this morning. We want to thank you for being with us. This is CCN Radio. 89.5 HD2, Robstown, Corpus Christi. This is KLUX, as always, good company. Thank you very much, sir. I will, that's it. We're not going to do any, I'm going to call you on the phone.